David Randall.
Hot music that'll take your breath away.
Hello and welcome to Assume the Position. And by way of a slight change, in the first hour this week, we'll be chatting to the frontman, vocalist, the guitar player, and also songwriter of Million Sellers, in the USA at least. That's Blue October. They're playing some rare dates in the UK from this Wednesday to the 4th of March, in fact, including dates in London, Birmingham and Manchester. A great chance to hear the band playing. They've built an audience for themselves, mainly in the USA, from the late 1990s. And in the next hour, we'll hear more about their music and some of those great tracks from the current album, Home, and also delving into the back catalogue. And we're going to start off with a brand new single here in the UK to coincide with the tour. This is the full album version of Coal Makes Diamonds.
Is the wind. I know where I'm going and I know where I've been. You're the horizon in the wide open space, and I surround you, caressing your face. There's not a limit to the things that I do. I give you stars, but the stars wouldn't do. You're like the lava burning buried below, an eruption. Too early to show.
Islands are here, oh,
And here at Get Ready to Rock, we're saying hello to the frontman, the songwriter, guitarist with the band Blue October. And sounds like you've got a bit of windy weather there, actually. I can hear this rustling in the background.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I live out in the woods.
Ah.
And the only good service I have is when I'm out in the yard. And so I'm standing out here, and I always like to take walks with my children.
Ah.
So I have my 10-month-old in a carriage, and I'm walking him down the street to where I get good service.
It sounds great. Well, hello to you, Justin Furstenfeld. And we started off with the new single here in the UK, and that's Coal Makes Diamonds. Now, Blue October developed really in the 1990s, right in the middle of the grunge period, really. And I pick up from listening to your music, Justin, I reckon you were picking up on the back of like the 80s music, and there are influences there. But how easy or difficult was it in the early days getting attention for the band, you know, attracting label attention?
Well, like you said, it was all about the grunge when we first started out, and I was not a grunge band, you know. I listened to The Smiths and The Cure, and it was when you got signed back then, it was like, well, you better put on some heavy guitars because that's the only thing that's being played on the radio. And so, you know, we did what we could. We still had the formula of the songs. It's just we had to beef it up a little bit for the labels to like it. So it was good because Blue October was one of those bands that can always change as the time goes by. As long as you have a good song, you can always embrace it in any kind of style. But you're right about, like, I grew up listening to the Cocteau Twins, The Smiths, The Cure, Joy Division, things like that. So when it came to Nirvana and Alice in Chains and Pearl Jam, I was never really a huge fan of it, but I was coming out at that time after that, so
yes,
I was still stuck on The Cure. You know, Disintegration is one of the best albums ever made, you know.
Blue October, very much a sort of Texas-based band, at least originally, and you can tell me what happened after that. But Texas, I think I'm right in saying, quite eclectic in terms of music in that region. I mean, anything from punk rock to country, and of course alt rock as well. Did that have any influence on you in the early days, Justin?
Yeah, the cool thing about Texas is there's so much different music that comes out of it. Of course, we have our country music, you know, but you know, especially coming from Houston, you had a lot of hip hop, you had a lot of art rock, and so back in the 90s, you had like a lot of weirdos just making really cool music. So I just considered myself one of those weirdos. I was just a little bit sappier, you know. And you know, there was never really like a definite style of music that you had to be. And I think that's one of the things that I love so much about being in Blue October, is we never got pegged down as a certain style. And as the years have gone by, we've kind of stayed true to that. Because, like, if you popped in a Smiths album, you can't really nail it down. You know, it's going to be this really sad stuff, or it's going to be really heavy, or it's going to be really beautiful, or it's going to be, you know, it's just, you can't really peg it down, you know?
Mm. Now, your first album for Universal, I think I'm right in saying, again, you reworked some songs that were on your debut album, but two years later, you were then dropped by the label. What actually happened then? Because they re-signed you a few years later, didn't they?
Yeah, what happened was basically we sold 15,000 units, and in a world where 4 million was a good number, you know. And so when we sold 15,000 units, of course they dropped us. I would have dropped us too, you know. Mm. And but what happened was I went to work right after that, and I was like, well, if they're going to drop us, I'm going to do it on my own. So I wrote a song called Calling You, which hit the airwaves, and I've sold like 20,000 copies on my own, and Universal came calling back and we re-signed a record deal with them. And there was a lot of labels that wanted us. It's just I felt more comfortable going with Universal because we had this upfront relationship with each other that was basically like, look, let's do this. And so we went back with Universal, which was a good choice.
Yeah. You know? And I suppose it also gave you a bit of insight into going alone, really, in terms of getting your music out to people. You know, when you were dropped originally, you had to think on your feet a bit, didn't you, really?
Oh, yeah, you got to get on the road and say, just because you didn't sell a lot doesn't mean you can't get on the road and go do it yourself, guerrilla style, you know, sell
yes.
10 copies a day.
That's you know? Good, and yeah.
And if you're out there playing 300 days a year and you sell 10 copies a day, I mean, you'll do some good, you know?
Yeah.
And we just stayed on the road. I mean, we had a 15-seater van that we put 300,000 miles on in the first year, and then the second year we put 500,000 miles on it. Huh. It was just insane. It's just what we did. It's what we loved.
Yes.
You know?
Well, let's play in a track now from an album released back in 2011, Any Man in America. And I think, you know, listeners, if they're not familiar with your music, they'll find a lot of interest, not least, Justin, in the lyrics. You know, that album in 2011, it was on the back of difficult personal circumstances, because I think you'd just been divorced, hadn't you? And there's a lot of confessional in the lyrics, really, if people want to listen out for that. You know, it's an honest approach, isn't it? And no doubt it has attracted you know, wider attention. That's one of the hallmarks of Blue October, really.
Yeah, it's just the honesty. That one was pretty blunt, though. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm glad that one's over with, because it was a hard time.
Yes.
It was a really difficult time, and it was a really difficult time to go through. It was a really difficult time to write, but I'm glad I did. You know, but it is one of those albums where you listen to it and you're like, ooh, I kind of feel uncomfortable listening to this.
Yeah.
see the door close down behind you. I watch your face turn from glow to straight gray. See the moon go up and it shines this glory on my face. Who would know?
Let's just talk about, you know, the UK, and you're playing dates, and they are rare dates, really, in the UK, and that's happening very soon. In fact, we're talking in late February 2017, and you've got a handful of dates at the beginning of March. Now, I'm not aware that the band has had any great success in the UK, certainly nowhere near as much as the USA. Have you been helped by radio in the USA? Is that one of the key things, or Justin, have you just been literally working really hard over the last decade to build a fan base?
I've literally been working so hard to build a fan base in the USA. I mean, it's literally like every day. It's such a an art form and a game. That you have, it's like a chess game over here in the U.S. You have to put out good product, and then you have to have the right relationships, and then you got to be able to hustle. You got to be able to invest your time and your own money and yourself, and make sure that everybody can take care of their families. You know, we're no longer with a big label, so everything is on us to make it happen. You know what I'm saying? And it's just, we would love to be able to come to the U.K. more. Hope. It's a hustle over here, you know. It's being able to invest your time and your money into something that you truly believe in, and it's very. It's just once you stop doing it, then people forget about you over here. America is so, our attention span is so short over here that we have to keep it going to keep it going. If we stop and go away for 6 months, then we become a has-been. Like that, you know. So, but in the UK, it we've never popped over there because we've never had Universal Records pushing us over there. We never, and I can't push my label over there because it's just, I can't come over there and work, you know. So we have to be very careful about when we come over there, and we just try to do whatever we can to keep everybody interested over in the UK. And the one thing that we love about coming to the UK is that when we do get there, the people are so passionate. It's insane how passionate you guys are.
Ah.
And that's due to the fact that we don't get to come over there a lot. You
yes,
know?
Yes.
But when we do, it's just like, what? And that's what I'm really looking forward to, is your passion.
No, that's interesting you say that, really. It's a genuine love of the music, isn't it, really? That's what you're talking about. And
it really is, because, I mean, I don't know if it's because you're more romantic than us, but your music that came out of the UK when I was growing up was far more romantic, you know? So I don't know what you guys have in your water over there or what you're eating, but you've got passion coming out of your pores, and I just love it.
Oh, this is good. Well, let's have a track from the current album, Home. You've been having great success in the States, and as we mentioned before we started the interview, you had dates lined up towards the end of last year, 2016, but due to the great success of the album and singles from that album, you had to postpone those dates. So that's really good, Justin, and it's great to hear that you're having that continued success. This is one of our favourite tracks off the album. It's called The Lucky One.
Share it with people that have different names. Whether to wait or weather the storm, you leave it to fate, it's one and the same. As long as you're with me, we can move on. As long as you're here, I'm the lucky one.
We don't know which way the wind blows and for how long. We're starting. Sunset operator.
How do we do this?
Now, the albums we've heard most recently, that's Home and the previous album called Sway, they're full of great hooks and really nice instrumentation, always very well produced. Now,
thank you.
Do you consciously, or perhaps unconsciously, stick to any formula when you make an album? Because, I mean, actually, you haven't got any big label pressures which might come to bear on future albums. So, am I right in saying you can pretty much do what you want, really?
Yeah, you can. And from being in the business for 23 years now, I know what, like, hooks are so important. Melodies are so important. And I used to think, like, it was Any Man in America that really, I said so much in that album. Like, there were so many lyrics that I just force-fed the audience. And while people loved it, after that, I wanted to let people think for themselves. And so the more simple I could be, but more poignant and more lyrically melodic is my point now, you know, and less instrumentation, just greater parts, you
yes.
know, and bigger drums, more atmosphere, less confusion, less words, hit them to the point when they hear it one time, they want to hear it again, you know, and then take them away, you know. So there's a formula to it, but then there's songs like Time Changes Everything, where it goes on for 7 minutes.
Yes.
And it's just, that doesn't need a formula, it just needs emotion, you know, and you just go with it. Because Peter Gabriel did that with Secret World, and it's just like it goes on for 8 minutes, and it's just this transformation. And while it's not Peter Gabriel, it's my closest attempt.
I mean, I was going to say that to you, that listening to a selection of your songs this week, I thought, you know, I recognise, even in your vocal inflections, Justin, I detect a bit of Peter Gabriel there.
Oh, he's my idol.
Aww.
Some people like Elvis, some people like, you know, Peter Gabriel. Oh, uh-huh. God, he's so good.
Well, on that theme, let's play a track from your previous album, Sway. I wanted to mention this. It clocks in at about 6 minutes. It's a bit progressive. Debris.
Oh, yeah, Debris. Yeah. That's my favorite song off that whole album.
Well, that is totally different, isn't it?
Thank you. That's my favorite track off that album.
Ah, because that's the previous album, did you have any idea to do something similar, perhaps, on the current album?
You know, it did give me a sort of a freedom, because that became everybody's favorite song off of Sway.
Right.
With the one that just goes bang at the end and goes so big.
Yeah.
And it's so sensual and sexy, you know, and Time Changes Everything was like more of a statement of where I am in life. And so when I did that, there wasn't a time code on it. You don't have to worry about how long it's going to be, and you just have as much fun as you can and make it as beautiful as possible. Debris, you know, that's a song about my wife and I, you know. That's a song about our love life, our intimate life, our love for each other, our physical, our emotional, our spiritual connection. You know, that's what that song's about, you know.
Thank you.
We're going to play a track off the album which really established the band. It's called Foiled, and it sold over a million copies in the States. Now, is it right then that what happened on the back of that? Did you continue to tour in the States? Because we did. I don't think we saw you in Europe at all.
No, and that's what was crazy. I always thought that Universal would have pushed that.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't come to Europe until 2010, approaching Normal album. And that's when, you know, everybody stopped selling albums and started, you know, touring more.
Yes.
And Foiled was a complete success, you know, sold like 2.5 million albums in the States, and I think maybe sold 10 albums in the UK.
In another age, I mean, you know this, that, you know, if we can turn the clocks back maybe 30 years, a band like Blue October would have been global, wouldn't they, in terms of success? You know, it would have been...
I don't know. If you say so. I'm just super grateful that I can even do this for a living, and I just to get to wake up every day and go, wow, I get to write a song today, I get to talk about that.
Yes.
You know, I'm super happy that it's happening the way it is, because it keeps me grateful, humble, and blessed, and it makes me work hard, because I've seen what number one spot feels like, and I've seen what selling a million records feels like, and that was probably the worst time of my life. You know, I did not like it.
Yeah.
I didn't like it, you know, because it was just, once you sell a million albums and once you go to number one, you're expected to be number one always.
Yes.
If you become number two, all of a sudden you're a failure.
Yeah.
So I would rather sit around number 20, number 22, you know, so I can always just come in and punch people in the face with a good song and then get the hell out of there. And then come back 6 months later and punch them in the gut with a good song and get the hell out of there.
Yeah. Because that sort of success brings its own pressures, doesn't it? And personal pressures and all sorts. It's not all good. It's not all good, is it, really?
No, I've had a marriage fail. I've had divorce. You know, I've had drug addiction. I've had alcohol abuse. You know, I've had money that's been stolen. I've had lawsuits. All at the price of selling a million records. And it's like I don't have to sell a million records. I can go out and sell 100,000 records of my own on my own time, on my own pace. And I know that this ecosystem of the Blue October fans will always be there if I always give them legitimate music and good product.
Yes.
You know, and then I can come overseas and dip my foot over there and be like, oh, there's that passion from the UK. And then if it grows, it grows. If it doesn't, then I'll just come dip in there once or twice a year.
Yes.
You know, but just think that if I keep doing it and it keeps growing, then maybe I'll be able to come back there and be able to afford it.
Yeah.
It's just I have to pay all the bills these days. And I've got like the band that has kids now, so I got to think of everyone, you know.
Yeah. No, it's a big thing, and but it's quite nice, really, Justin, to have the thought that there's still a challenge of breaking in more into the UK and certainly the European market, because if they like you in the UK, they're going to like you in Germany and Scandinavia, aren't they?
Oh, they will, and that's just another challenge that I can put on my bucket list of goals, you know?
Yes, yes.
And just slowly, slowly chip away at that.
Yes.
You know, and do it the right way, and do it the slow way, the way that it'll last forever, not the quick way, you know?
No, that's right. But we'll play a track from this million-selling plus album, which is Foiled. We're going to play a great track, which I think only appears on the UK edition of the album, and that's... Chameleon Boy.
Oh, wow, that's a good one.
Now, tell me about that. Was that like, did that come out of the Foil sessions?
No, actually, that was on the History for Sale album.
Ah, right.
And which was before the Foil sessions. That's the album that got me re-signed to Universal.
Ah, right.
So that's a pretty dark song, but it's a good one. I like it.
We do like the dark songs here, so let's hear that now.
And I'm ready for the world to see the secret I kept here inside, the man you thought I'd be. Slip into coma calm, the coma where I calm myself down. Here comes excuses why I let you down.
Stand by for another breakdown. I swore I wouldn't be calm. Chameleon boy. Chameleon boy. So now we've come upon the hardest thing I've ever done. It's telling you that I'm a mess. What sort of mess? I mean is self-destructive gasoline, the kind that strips you of your best. And while I play instead the way that most would end up dead, you sleep alone at home and wish that I were in our bed. With this I'm telling you my color changes back to blue. How do I ask you this? Will you help me through?
Stand by for another breakdown. Sound off the alarm. Is this the chameleon boy? I swore I wouldn't be calm. Stand by for another breakdown. Sound off the alarm. Is this the chameleon?
Twisted part, where did all my idols end up? They've all passed away.
Now look, we're going to play out with another track from the current album, another one of our favourites here, and it's We Know Where You Go.
Oh, that's my favourite off the new album. You know, like We Know Where You Go is probably one of my favorite songs I've ever written, because it's simple, it's hooky as hell.
Yes.
And it's just so simple. It's so simple, you know, and that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
You can whistle it. You can sit there and go, you know, and I love that. When you can whistle a song and know what it is, you got one.
Yeah. And I have this conversation with other artists, really. I mean, you've grown up, you've just said, haven't you, how many years? I think it's over 20 now, isn't it, since you've really, you know, you've been in the business.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a lack of really decent songwriting from the younger generation these days? I mean, I tend to be a bit cynical about this, but do you think there's a lack of craftsmanship?
No. I think it's just a new way to do it.
Right.
I think that everybody's got their own way, and I think that it's creative as hell. What people are doing these days is just as creative as when Depeche Mode pushed their first sampler and it came out. People, you know, and it's just as creative. And I think they've got the niche of it is our attention span in the United States, at least, is so small.
Yes.
That you got to be hooked within the first 5 seconds, and then you got to be done with the song within 3 minutes. It's so small because everybody wants to get on their iPhone. Everybody wants to see what social media is doing. So it's just part of the game now.
Yes.
I commend every single person in the world that can hold a 15-year-old attention for more than 3 minutes.
Mm.
So as far as craftsmanship goes, I salute you, Justin Bieber.
Oh.
You know, I salute you, Lorde. I salute you, Taylor Swift. I salute anybody who's out there writing pop hits right now that can actually do it and keep their attention. When you look at bands like Alt-J that are out there killing it, doing that crazy thing they do, I love that. When you look at bands like Sigur Rós that are just insanely good, you know, I love that. And it's just, you know, everybody's got their own thing. It's just only some of them sell millions of records nowadays. You can't get butthurt about it, you know?
No.
You can't, because some people will be like, well, it's, all that stuff sucks. Well, they're the ones selling millions of records, so they must be doing something right.
But do you think in the longer term, this is the key thing, I think, Justin, is that how durable will a lot of this material be? I mean, we'll be, you know, in, say, 30, 40 years' time, will we be playing Justin Bieber songs, you know?
I don't know, but I know I'll be around in 30 or 40 years' time because I'm just going to keep doing what I do. 30 or 40 years, you're going to be like, there's that son of a bitch, Justin. He's still going at it. I'll be like, hi, what's
yeah.
up, homie? You know, I don't know what Justin Bieber will do, you know, but I mean, you got to give it to him right now. You know, whatever he's doing good. He's on fire. You got like Drake. You got Future. You got Justin Bieber. You got the Chainsmokers. Coldplay. Look at Coldplay.
Mm-hmm.
They're still doing it. They're doing great. Look at Adele.
Yes.
She's amazing. Look at Beyonce. I mean, I prefer Rihanna over Beyonce, but they're all killing it. Just seriously killing it. You will hear Hello in the next 40 years and be like, oh, that song's so good. You will. You will hear Sia, Chandelier, in the next 40 years and go, oh, that's so good. You know? You've got songs like that. You'll hear 21 Pilots and be like, oh, that band, they're good. You know? So there are a lot of good craftsmanship out there. Just that it's just the content these days. Our world is so less patient these days.
Yes.
And they need it now. They need it now. You know, The Cure's Pictures of You would never be as special as it is if it didn't come out in 89, you know?
Yeah. Based on all your albums, you know, to a new listener, which album would you point them towards? Would you basically say, well, listen to the latest album?
Yeah, I would say listen to Home, the latest, because it's kind of like when you finally find out who you're supposed to be in life and you want people to know the best part of you. You know, you don't want them to know when you were growing up and you fell down a few times.
Yes.
You know, you don't want them to know when you were drinking a little bit too much back in your day and you sound a bit like a whiny bitch. You know
yes.
what I'm saying?
No, I know.
You want them to know when you found that peace and when you found that just like, oof, I'm going to go out there and get that world and I'm going to eat it up. And that would probably be Home. Now I'm in the studio today writing new songs that are better than Home. And I'm just like, whew. Let's do this. I can't wait for you to hear them.
Oh, this is good.
So it's always something. I got to always keep it up and keep it up and keep going. Because there's 1,000,000,000 21-year-olds that want my spot. Hell no.
No, that's right. You keep them back. Keep them back.
Yeah. And it's people like you that care, that give me the time of day, and I appreciate that.
Well, that's all right. Well, we're going to play out with that track. As you say, it's a favourite, your favourite, and one of ours, certainly from the new album. And the tour in the UK starts in Birmingham on the 1st of March. The problem with this is there aren't enough of the dates, are there really?
Yeah, because the thing is those were the only dates. I mean, I'll just be honest with you. In today's day and age, like, I tried to book a bigger tour.
Yes.
People don't buy tickets because
That's
they haven't
right.
heard from us in a while.
Yeah, no, I
so
know.
We're going to come there. But the good thing is we're going to play two shows in London. That tells us that our crowd is getting bigger in London.
Yes.
Our crowd is getting bigger in Manchester and bigger in Birmingham, you know, and bigger in Frankfurt and bigger in Berlin and,
yes.
and Cologne.
Yeah.
You know, but we need to work on Hamburg. We need to work on Amsterdam. We need to, you know, those things. And we will. We will.
Yeah.
We're not going away anytime soon.
I should say one of those London dates is already sold out. So that's another great indication, isn't it?
Yes, sir, it is,
yeah.
And we're very close to selling out the second date, you know, so I'm just looking forward to being in London for 2 days so I can go get tattooed by a London tattoo artist, you know. I just can't wait, man. That's all I do now is get tattooed and write songs.
In different... What a lifestyle.
Get tattoos, and I can't wait for your coffee. I'm so sick of American coffee. I want UK coffee.
So when were you last in the UK, then?
Last time I was in the UK is when I did my open book winter tour in 2015. I did my acoustic tour over there.
Right.
Just me.
Oh.
And it was super amazing. I played London, I played Manchester, and it was I only played those two places, and it was sold out both times, and it was pretty amazing. It was great.
Because that's a different approach. So that's where you're talking to the audience and playing some of your key songs, I suppose, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, look, Justin, all the very best, and we hope to catch up with you in, if not London, certainly Manchester next week.
Perfect. Make sure that you say hi to me so I can give you a big old hug, okay?
Oh, that's great, and it's been really great talking to you. I'm glad we caught up with each other. All the very best, Justin, with your music. Take care, won't you?
I will, buddy. You have a good day, bub.
Way, even on a sunny day, I wish I could have seen your pain. I would have never let you walk away. How could I let it get this far? Tell me what you're going through, 'cause every time you run away, just know I follow you. Skies.
feel the rain fall, wash away the night crawl, reaching for an end to your war. Cause we would give you anything and more. We know where you go, we're watching you close. And we know where you go. And we know.
Well, our thanks to Justin Furstenfeld, and our thanks also to Paul Nugent at Rainmaker Artists, and to Gary Levermore, Red Sands PR, and the Blue October UK dates. Take them to Birmingham. That's on the 1st of March, the 2nd in Manchester at the Ritz, and the two London dates, the 3rd of March and the 4th. Lots to come now in the second hour of the show as we invite you to assume the position.
Please stay with us.